Welcome to the Holistic Health Podcast, where we delve into topics that bridge wellness and science for the skin, gut, mind, body, and soul. This podcast is brought to you by Gvome, where we believe that each of us has a unique ecosystem and path to reach our full vitality.
I'm your host, Dr. Raja Sivamani, an integrative physician and an Ayurvedic practitioner. Gvome is the notion that our jiva, the Sanskrit word for vitality and the essence of life, merges with our many ecosystems that compose our biome to form our unique jivome. This podcast is meant for educational and informational purposes only. None of the information presented here are a substitute for professional medical care, and this podcast does not constitute medical advice. If you have a medical concern, please consult with your physician. Welcome, everyone. Today we're talking hypnosis and hypnotherapy. And we're talking to Dr. Lisa Lombard, and she is a hypnotherapist. She's also a licensed clinical psychologist. And maybe a lot of you didn't realize that hypnotherapy is a part of psychological services. And Dr. Lombard has been treating people, children, families, adults for over 25 years. And she integrates clinical hypnosis and mindfulness into her psychotherapeutic work. And we are really excited to talk to you today, Lisa. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And then could you tell us a little bit about where you are today? I mean, you're at the university, is that right? You're at Northwestern University?
That's right. So I'm located in Chicago, and part of my work is conducted at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine, where I'm a research assistant professor in a group that studies community problems in health, particularly food allergies and asthma. And then I'm also a clinical psychologist working in an independent elementary school in Chicago, and I have a private practice too.
Wow. I don't know how you get 24 hours in the day doing all you do, but that's pretty amazing.
Thank you. It's a bit of a juggle right now. You're right.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, I think one of the questions that a lot of us have had is hypnosis seems to be what we see on TV and what, you know, people portray it to be. But I thought we could get the straight news from you on what is hypnosis and how is it different than what we might see in the media or on TV?
Absolutely. That's such a good beginning question, because we do see portrayals of it on TV or in films, which are really showing what is referred to as stage hypnosis. So it's not the kind of hypnotic experience that someone who's using it as part of a therapeutic treatment or for pain management would be using it. What you're seeing on TV are really examples of people exploiting some of our susceptibility to suggestion into the context. So, you know, the big shows in hotels or at parties are really those stage hypnotists. In the kind of work that I'm describing, when it's used therapeutically or in medical hypnosis, it's really used by a licensed practitioner, obviously, and it's used to help the person get in touch with his or her internal resources and make some behavioral changes. It's not something where you lose control. I know lots of people will ask that question, am I going to lose control, or are you going to make me bark like a dog or quack like a duck? And that is not what it's all about, right?
So then how do you use clinical hypnosis? You know, what's the science behind it and what's the thought of how it works?
Yeah, there are a number of, historically, there's been a number of ways to think about it. One way is understanding it as an altered state of consciousness, or something that's a little bit easier, I think, to start to understand it and take it in, is thinking of it as an absorbed experience. It's an imaginative experience where we're highly absorbed in either a set of images or an activity, some sort of experience where we go internally, and it can be quite vivid. It can include some type of time distortion where either time seems to fly or go by very slowly. Some of our internal sensations might change, which can be used really quite nicely and effectively to help with pain management, with increasing relaxation and blood flow, and regulating some of those autonomic body systems. And it probably takes place in a couple ways. We know, in terms of our understanding of the brain, that there are different brain waves associated with it. So it's more of a theta experience. It's not sleep, it's not dreaming, but it is this internal absorption. And there's also some understanding of it as kind of turning on a variety of parts of the brain at the same time that are involved in imagery and that are really involved in the executive control network, and kind of understanding through functional MRIs that there's a pattern now of brain activation that looks like it might be a signature for the people who are highly hypnotizable.
Yeah, I think this is very interesting. And thanks for differentiating hypnosis from sleep. I think that's a question that a lot of people really want to know. How about meditation? How about if someone is in a meditative mood, how does hypnosis differ from that?
Yeah, absolutely. They're very closely related. And so people are on the right track and wondering how are they connected and trying to tease it apart and understand it. Meditation has often a more narrowed focus so that we're very intentionally turning our focus or attention on something like the breath or on a sensation or on an experience out in the world or a taste. Whereas hypnosis might be more of a broadening of our attention, allowing a variety of things to come into our awareness. And the key and signature difference is that in the use of clinical hypnosis, we are also including suggestions for change. So it might be someone who's working with you clinically, or it might be you yourself have developed the suggestions that you would like your whole brain, if you will, your whole mind as it's working in hypnosis, to imagine how this change will unfold and to experience elements of it while in a hypnotic experience. Whereas in meditation, it's really the experience itself of being in the here and now without that use of suggestion.
You know, this is very interesting, Lisa, because you're suggesting that, I mean, no pun intended, yeah. But I guess what you're getting at is that during the hypnosis experience, you're actually able to maybe manifest some changes in the person that they would are looking forward to. Is that the idea?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. So it could be through management of some pain and relaxation, or it could be mentally rehearsing going into stressful or anxiety-provoking situation and being able to overcome that fear and behave in a new way. And so those experiences actually can be rehearsed and kind of worked through in that hypnotherapeutic way.
So say someone has performance anxiety, whether it be an athlete that is in the making or a musician, or maybe just public speaking, or if you're needing to get up in front of a crowd, maybe it's your fifth grade class or whatnot, and you're right. Just, you know, you have a lot of anxiety. Are those people that where hypnosis could be beneficial?
Yes, yes. Those are all really good applications and examples of using hypnosis for that. It really is something that can be very practically applied like that. And anxiety and stress are some of those early applications that we're most familiar with as psychologists, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is pretty eye-opening because, you know, one of the first things that I think many people receive as treatment if they go in and say, I'm stressed or I have something that is really like anxiety provoking, is that there may be some sort of medication that they're given. I'm curious, should clinical hypnosis be moved up higher on the list of possible ways to treat someone in terms of their options?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of value to thinking about that. Certainly, as you're proposing, it may be a really useful alternative to medication. And as one of my mentors says, it's about skills, not pills. So being able to teach people those skills that they'll use in situations across their lifetime. So not simply that one example of public speaking, but really it's how to develop those skills.
Yeah.
Certainly there aren't any known adverse long-term effects to using hypnosis. And so we can think of it as a pretty safe kind of treatment. And there are some growing bodies of literature that are using randomized controlled trials to really look at the use of hypnosis for things like gut disorders, irritable bowel syndrome, things like that, where either in combination with medication or now instead of any medication, it's really seen as the gold standard type of treatment.
So then it kind of begs the question for me, and I'd love for you to just kind of go through maybe broadly, what are the kind of conditions that can be helped? Because now you've mentioned a little bit about gut health. That's gotten me a bit excited to learn more, that it's not just about like a mental situation, but you can really tie into other aspects of health within the body. It sounds
Yeah, that's what's really exciting, because what we're finding is that when conditions are worsened or flare-ups take place because of stress, then if we're able to manage that stress reaction using hypnotherapy, we can actually reduce the occurrence of flare-ups. So things like the gut disorders, headaches are another targeted area. Sometimes migraines, sometimes stress headaches. It's complicated, but it's a very effective application. There are certainly things related to used for pain management across a variety of areas like dentistry.
Is that right?
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. There's a segment of dentists who are trained in using clinical hypnosis. So you can see that's kind of a neat application for anesthetic and pain for children. And I work quite a bit with kids for either procedural pain, vaccinations, blood draws, kids who have chronic conditions where they have repeated pinpricks or other kinds of procedures, which are painful. It's used in obstetrics to either support labor and delivery or as a form of analgesia. It's used also widely in oncology, cancer treatments for comfort, for helping with reducing nausea associated with some medications and treatments. So its role in a lot of medical subspecialties as well.
Well, that's fascinating. You know, it's amazing that I haven't really heard a good scientific lecture on this at any point during my medical education. Lisa, we need you out there. We need to get more people hearing about this. This is pretty interesting.
Well, I thank you. I really appreciate your enthusiasm and your position to want more people to know about it, because it has been around for hundreds, thousands of years. And as we learn more about the science, it gives us more of a sense of the how and why it works. And it also often entails a very pleasant, relaxing experience. So there's something to be said for that as well.
Oh, that's great. Now, you mentioned you work with kids. How young is too young, or is there a limit on how young the child can be?
Well, it certainly looks different with the very youngest of the kids. So when I'm working with kids who might be pre-K and kindergarten in that age range, even as young as 3 years old, it's going to be something that looks more like a playful interaction. Kids that young don't sit still. They can't hold their attention for very long. They're certainly not comfortable closing their eyes and going into an imaginative experience in that way. But through their play, if you think about having a tea party with a young child and pretending to be the customer at the cafe and all those sorts of things, you are engaged in an absorbed imaginative experience. And so as a therapist, I can still work with that child and help to introduce some suggestions for how they're going to gain skills related to the area that's troubling them. And then with the older children who are obviously more verbal in the school age years, it's kind of fun because they'll go in and out of a hypnotic experience and talk about it and offer great suggestions. And so thinking about how we all got absorbed in, for example, the Harry Potter series, that's quite an example of being
worldwide.
Yeah, prone to being involved in something that's so vivid, so relaxing at times, exciting at times, offers lessons. So you can use even modalities that are more conversational, and the introduction of metaphor for those kinds of kids can be very effective. And then as kids move into their teenage years and young adult years, it does look more and more like what we think of as working with adults, where it's a quieter experience, perhaps, where an individual is using his or her own imagery and listening to some of the suggestions that have been developed in the context of the therapy.
Yeah, it's quite versatile the way that clinical hypnosis is used. And I can see that it's very different than what might be considered stage hypnosis. That's becoming very clear to me. So,
good. I'm glad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited that you're taking us through this. Now, is there a right kind of a person in terms of thinking of hypnotherapy? Or let me ask it differently. Are there people where it just doesn't work?
Yes, I think there's people who it may not be, you know, the right time in terms of what they're grappling with, and they might need a different modality. And there are some people who don't have all the conditions right. But in general, we think of it as being something that almost everyone in our population can experience some of the elements of hypnosis. So it might be a lighter version of it, or for some people who are very talented in this area, it could be quite a deep experience. And so I think it's just important to kind of assess that going in, talking with the patient about it, seeing what their previous experiences have been like, getting a good history, obviously, and hearing about whether they may have some preconceived notions or misconceptions that kind of are roadblocks that you first need to talk with and help educate them about the safety and the effectiveness of it, and then move forward. So it's not certainly one size fits all. And there are some people, it just might be a matter of timing in the context of the treatment to help us determine when it could be most effective.
Well, Lisa, why don't you walk us through how long would a session take, perhaps? And then what can someone expect to feel? Is there a range of emotions that they go through when they go through one of these sort of sessions?
Sure. So in my work as a psychologist, so in my practice, there's the traditional kind of 50-minute hours, and the hypnotic portion of that session might be about 30 minutes or so. 40 minutes. And it's really, there's a phase of that experience, what is called the induction phase. So it's really the invitation and entry into the hypnotic experience. And then there's another type of phase, which is really the application phase, which is when these suggestions are woven in and the person might respond to them. And we would discuss that. So in the traditional psychotherapeutic session, it takes place in that clinical hour. And after the hypnosis is over, we certainly debrief and process what it was like, what worked, what didn't work, what the person might like to engage in again. And I often have that as a recording that my patients will then use at home to engage in what's called self-hypnosis, to do it on their own. But there are lots of other folks who are doing 20-minute appointments because they're in a busy or practice setting. And so it can be much more of a conversational type of hypnotic experience where some of these metaphors and suggestions are more quickly woven into the conversation with the patient. And it would be once a week or once every few weeks if a person's coming into a clinic. And so it doesn't have to be in a full hypnotic hour. And some of it now, of course, is delivered via telemedicine, telehealth.
There you go. Yeah, the sign of the times, right?
So,
well, thanks for taking us through some of these different approaches and what to expect. Now, you mentioned self-hypnosis. How does that work?
Yeah, so self-hypnosis is without another person there. So it's, the old-fashioned term was also auto-hypnosis. So it's being on your own. In terms of how it's introduced to the patient, I usually first have a person do some hypnotic experience with me present that I'm guiding them, and then I'll teach them some skills for their sake so that they're able to do their own induction again and much more quickly with practice go into that internal experience. And they may be repeating what we were doing in the office, or they might really enjoy it by exploring and developing new threads and themes and images that they're using at home. It can be about a 5 to 10 minute self-guided practice then on a daily basis at home to reinforce what was done in the office. And so that's when it's still part of that treatment. And then many people just have it be part of a lifelong practice, really, in their experience for managing stress or for just kind of taking a bit of a pause each day.
Thanks for taking us through what hypnosis is and also, you know, giving us an idea of how it isn't just what we've all been accustomed to hearing. I think it's nice when we have an expert like you really put it into perspective. Gosh, I feel like all of my patients, including myself, would probably benefit from some level of getting some clinical hypnosis to help us with different challenges that we have that come up during the day. And I think what you mentioned was that almost everyone could get some benefit out of this. I guess the amount of benefit you get really depends. How do people find a practitioner? And was my comment accurate there? I mean, does everybody get some level of benefit?
I think they do. I mean, I've been working with hypnosis now for many years, almost 30 years. And it really, I am sincere in saying that it adds a really nice layer of quality to one's life to be able to simply take a pause and kind of refresh our energy level or explore something and come to a better understanding of something, or just to feel like we have more capacity to go about our daily lives. So it doesn't have to be around a clinical problem, but it can be for the stress of life and for just managing the ups and downs of things. So I think it does hold a real opportunity for people to add some value to their lives by learning how to explore their own internal mind. I think that in terms of finding a therapist or a clinician who can work with it to affect some necessary change or to help with symptom management or to work on pain reduction, things like that, one should always look for a licensed professional in that field. So first and foremost, someone needs to, the clinician should be trained and credentialed in the field in which they're practicing. And then there's specialized training in hypnosis that is offered through a couple of different national organizations. One is the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis, another is the Society of Clinical and Experimental Hypnosis, and a third is the National Pediatric Hypnosis Training Institute. And they are all high quality organizations with multidisciplinary members. So it ranges from physicians, nurses, psychologists, social workers, child life specialists, occupational therapists. Just it really represents the gamut of who is applying clinical hypnosis. And look for people who have become certified or who are approved consultants.
That's fantastic. And how do people find you, Lisa?
So I am available at www.lisalombardphd.com is my website. Or if you were to go to the Northwestern website, I could be reached through the Center for Food Allergy and Asthma Research, CFAAR, which is part of Northwestern School of Medicine.
Now that's fantastic. Dr. Lisa Lombard, thank you for your time today. And hopefully all of us will think about hypnosis as a possible therapy in the future, thanks to your inspiring words.
Well, thank you very much for asking these really spot on questions and your interest. And I hope that I've helped you and others take a fresh look at this.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is the Holistic Health Podcast, brought to you by Jivong, where we believe that cultivating a healthy ecosystem unique to you is important to living vital and living well. Don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to our channel, and be sure to follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and visit us at jivom.com. Check out our membership options to take your health to the next level.